Thank you to Cara for that wonderful song, and wonderful to see folks like Charlie here standing up and being recognized for all that they do. Wonderful to be back here. I think it was 4 years ago since I was last here, and every few years we return. It was a long trip. It was 11 years that we were really on the field, and we just came back for a short trip 4 years ago. We don't have long this morning because it's 11:45, but I'll try and be brief. Will you open your Bibles with me to Acts chapter 16, at that passage that was read to us? And you would have recognized this as Paul's second missionary journey, and you've read it before and are very familiar with it, I'm sure. And he travels quite a long way, doesn't he? He starts off in Antioch at the end of chapter 15, in verse 30. It says, the men were sent off and went down to Antioch, and they stayed there for some time. And then in verse 36 of chapter 15, we read that Paul and Barnabas say, let us go back and visit those churches that we visited on our first missionary journey. And so from Antioch, they head off at the start of chapter 16 to Derbe and Lystra. And that's no short journey. That's a few hundred kilometers that they've traveled from Antioch to Derbe and Lystra. And at the start, before they leave Derbe and Lystra, we read this verse in verse 5 from chapter 16. It wasn't read to this morning, but I'll just read it now. So the churches were strengthened in the faith and grew daily in numbers. Isn't that wonderful? That's just what we want. The individuals were strengthened in their faith and they grew in numbers. If only we could hear more of that in Scotland. But that's where it was. But then the next thing that happens in verse 6, where we read from this morning, what happens? It says they traveled throughout the region, and what happened? Nothing. It says they were prevented from preaching and speaking to the people in that area. They went first to Phrygia and Galatia, then they went to Mysia, then they went to try to get to Bithynia. Everywhere they went, a door stopped them. And they've gone from this, the churches are growing, all this excitement, their faith is growing, and suddenly it seems like the door is closed. And there are times when we can find ourselves asking the question, why? We're stuck somewhere, and we sense that nothing is happening. It could be in our personal lives, it could be in our church. Sometimes it's coming from, we're waiting for something to happen at work or some ministry to open and there's a delay and we get frustrated and annoyed. And it feels sometimes like there's a difficulty and the Lord is blocking the door. What do we do? Do we get impatient? Do we get frustrated? Or do we wait on the Lord? And this morning I want to talk a little bit about what do we do when we face difficulties? Because in this passage that we've read, we hear of one difficulty after another. First of all, Paul and Silas are kept from preaching the gospel in that area, and they're walking around. This is a huge area, the area that you mentioned. This is not a walk to Lanark or Wishaw. These are 300 or 400 or 500 kilometers apart, these distances. They're waiting and waiting for this opportunity, the frustration. And suddenly we find ourselves in a storm. How do we cope in those situations? They were in Asia. This area was, Antioch was in Syria, which of course is, although it's not called Antioch anymore, it's in the news at the moment because Antioch was just below Iraq, where modern-day Iraq is. Just at the area where the country is now trying to fight back from the ISIS and the Kurds at this time. So it's sort of that area is in the news at this time. And they find themselves, Paul and Silas have left Antioch and traveled round the corner into what would be Turkey today. And they're waiting. And they're waiting. Do you remember the story of the Israelites? They waited in Egypt for 450 years. In captivity. Finally, after all their cries and calls to God to do something after 450 years, then God releases them towards the promised land. Excitement. Finally, after all this wait, they can move forward. And what do they face? They face the Egyptian soldiers chasing after them. They face the Red Sea blocking their way. They have no water, no food. There are poisonous snakes on the way. It seems like every time we want to move forward, a storm arises and we face difficulties. The story is told of Thomas Edison. You probably remember Thomas Edison as the inventor of many, many things that we use today, not least the light bulb, the microphone, which I'm using at the moment, and the battery, amongst many, many other things. And all his inventions were stored in a building. We're talking 150 years ago now, okay? They were stored in the building. It was a concrete building, which may not seem unusual to us now, but back then it was thought that whatever was kept in this concrete building would be inflammable. It would never go up in flames. And all his inventions and his patents are kept in this building. And then the one thing you don't want to happen happens. A fire develops in that building. And all his inventions are inside it. All the battery that he was working on and creating was in that building. And it goes up in flames. And the fire brigade from 8 different towns around, it was such a big fire, they used 8 fire engines to try and put it out. But there wasn't enough water. And the fire was too big. And all his work was destroyed in one night. And Thomas Edison stood some distance away as all his life's work goes up in smoke. Well, there's a storm if ever there was one. What are you going to do? How would you face that difficulty? Thomas Edison says nothing. He goes home that night. And then in the morning, he comes and he says to his son, "There is great value in disaster, because all our mistakes are burned up." And he took the view, he said, "I'd made a lot of mistakes in that research." And he says, "I'm going to start again." And 3 weeks later, he'd invented the phonograph, which became the gramophone, which became the record player. He was the first person to record a voice onto a piece of material, tin foil. But here was a man who was facing a storm. And there may be storms that are developing in your life as well, just as Paul faced here. First of all, he had to wait, didn't he, in those verses 6 to 10. He waited and waited on the Lord and not knowing what was going to happen next until finally he has this vision. And the vision says, "Come over to Macedonia." Now, Macedonia is in Europe. They've been in Asia. They've never gone to Europe before. They've been in Asia all this time, preaching the word, developing the churches in Asia. Asia Minor, it was called back in those days. And now there's this call to go across the Mediterranean Sea into Europe, what is now part of Greece, northeast part of Greece, to Philippi. And if you remember your history, this was the start of the church moving into Europe. And from Europe, from that southern part of Europe, it went through to Corinth, to Rome, to Spain, and the whole of the rest of Europe. This was in historical terms, this was a massive point in church history. When it moved from one continent to another. And yet they were stood there waiting. What are we doing? What is God asking us? We want to get going, but we can't go. And the next moment is one of the biggest steps in Christendom, to move from Asia Minor into Europe. And following this, we read about this story as they get to Philippi, they meet Lydia, who's a seller of purple cloth, probably a very wealthy woman, and she hears Paul and comes to Christ. Now you may say, here is this massive step from Asia Minor out into Europe. Historically, it's a huge step. But does Paul or Luke, who's writing this, does he say, this was the start of a grand adventure? Doesn't say that. He writes about three people, the first of which is Lydia, who sells. She's a businesswoman. The second, from verse 16, is a slave girl who has a spirit in her, an evil spirit. And she's used by her owners to tell people their fortune. She's a fortune teller. And the third person we hear about in the story right at the end is the jailer. So here we have this immensely massive political start of the church in Europe. But they don't mention that. They talk about three individuals. You see, God is interested in individuals, in each and every one of us. And Luke is telling us this story to say is there are things going on in a massive scale that we may not even be aware of. And historically, it may be beyond our own time. But God says, but I'm interested in the individual. I'm interested in you, each and every one of you. And when you face difficulties, you may not see the plan that I have, but it's a huge plan. And the reason that I think Luke is telling us these individual stories is to say, yes, there's a big picture in the background. I'm taking the church from one continent to the next, and you're not going to believe what's going to happen next. But I'm going to help you as an individual. And so Paul heads off, meets Lydia, having waited and wondered what on earth was God doing. Then what happens? This slave girl with the evil spirit in her starts following Paul, and we read that in verse 17. It says, the girl followed Paul and the rest of us, shouting and annoying them. And then verse 18, she kept this up for many days, and finally Paul became so troubled. So here's Paul, he's sort of heading off into this new continent, and yet he's faced with this difficulty. Everywhere he goes, he's trying to tell people about Jesus, and suddenly he's got this young slave girl saying, "Well, this one's telling us about Jesus," and frustrating his plans. How often do we find ourselves? Maybe something we're wanting to do in the start us SU class in the local school. Maybe it's something that we're wanting to share the gospel with somebody at work. And we're frustrated. There's somebody saying, we don't want you at work. You're just a frustration. We're trying to represent Christ at work and we're getting mocked. And you think, why? Why is God doing this? And then Paul removes the evil spirit from this young girl. And you'd think everybody would be pleased that this evil spirit had been removed. And what happens? He's brought before the authorities in verse 20. They brought them before the magistrates and said, these men are Jews, and they're throwing our city into an uproar. Verse 22, and the magistrates ordered them to be stripped and beaten and thrown into jail. Another storm, another problem to face. The beginning of of verse 5 of this chapter, we've read, and their churches were growing in faith and growing in numbers. And at the end of the story that we're reading here, they're locked up in jail, shackled, having been stripped and beaten, facing difficulties. How do you and I respond to that sort of thing? It can be difficult, can't it? How do we face those difficulties? Well, Paul responds later on when he's looking back to this period in 2 Corinthians, chapter 1. He says this, verse 8. We do not want you to be uninformed, brothers, about the hardships we suffered in the province of Asia. So this is just as they're moving from Asia into Europe. We were under great pressure, far beyond our ability to endure, so that we despaired even of life. Indeed, in our hearts, we felt the sentence of death. And if you read back in Acts chapter 3, Acts chapter 14, they were beaten and left for dead. And Paul, looking back at the storms and the difficulties that he faced, says, don't get the wrong idea. Yes, we faced difficulties in verse 8. We suffered beyond our ability to endure, and we felt even we were going to die. But, see that in verse 9 of 2 Corinthians 1, it says, but. It's one of those wonderful buts in the Bible that we read about. It says, but this happened that we might not rely on ourselves, but on God. And there's the lesson, isn't it? That time and time again, we have to remember, why do these difficulties come our way? Why was Paul having to face this? Even at the crux, the very start of the church in Europe, so that they would not rely on themselves, but on God. So Paul and Silas find themselves in prison. And they've moved from Asia into Europe, traveled probably 1,500 kilometers, over 1,000 miles. And that's not down the A73. And they bring Lydia, they bring the jailer to Christ, individuals, because God has a plan. Just shortly after I'd gone to Thailand, a number of years ago now, I got a letter from one of the surgeons that I had trained with in Glasgow before I went to Thailand. And he wrote a letter saying, I have a young 17-year-old daughter, and she's finished school. She's thinking of going to university, maybe becoming a doctor. Don't know what to do with her over the summer. Can she travel to Thailand and join you in the hospital? And I knew this gentleman. He'd been a very good teacher while I was working with him, and said, yes, you can. I said, send her out, 17-year-old girl. Anyway, she arrived. I knew nothing about her. She arrived, got off the bus at the hospital in Thailand. She didn't have a word of Thai. And here, her hair is green. She has colored lenses. She's one thing, one's purple, one's yellow in her eyes. She's got studs all over her, places that I didn't know there were places to put studs. And she had this tiny little mini skirt on that was so mini, it was barely worth wearing. And here she was walking into the mission hospital compound. Well, I was a little shocked or a little surprised at first. Well, it turned out that she was 17, but her mother had been an alcoholic. And as she was growing up, had abused her and beaten her. And she would go to school with a big coat on and a cap that would be pulled down on her face to cover all the bruises that was on her face. And she, at the age of 11, she ran away from home to avoid her mother. From the age of 11, she hadn't lived at home. And she came out, she arrived at the hospital, and during those 11 years, she was into alcohol, drugs, opposite sex, you name it. She'd done it. I mean, I was 10 years older than her, and I had never heard of the stuff that she got into. And she arrived at 17, and her mother had attempted suicide over 200 times, being admitted to hospital. And the week before her dad had sent the letter to me, her mother had finally committed suicide and died. And this young 17-year-old was distraught because her mother had said to her, the reason I keep trying to commit suicide is because you're such a pain. And she said, one day I'll kill myself because of you. And she did. And this 17-year-old girl came out thinking, I've killed my mother. And she arrives on the doorstep, broken. And here I was. And she joined us on the ward rounds, seeing leprosy patients, seeing patients with AIDS. This was long before we had treatment for AIDS. Patients were dying. And she saw, asked the missionaries and the missionary ladies as well, the doctors and nurses working with these patients who had nothing. And over the 3 or 4 hours, she came each night and we'd talk and she'd be in tears, crying, saying, I hate my mother because of where I am now. My life is terrible. She's only 17, lived through so much. And over the weeks that she was there, she would cry for hours every night, just unloading her heart. And over the weeks that she was there, she came to know Christ. And all that there was there was broken down. She had no crutches there, and she came to know Christ. What a storm. What a difficulty she'd come through. And she'd gone from one part of the world, halfway around the world, just as Paul had left from Asia to go to Europe to meet people like Lydia and the slave girl. Because you and I might find ourselves in a storm. And we're thinking, why? But God has a plan. We may not see it, but he has a plan. And she returned after that 6 weeks in Thailand. She went to medical school, studied in Liverpool, went on to further training. And 14 years later, I was back in Glasgow. And a knock came on the door. And this young girl, now a doctor, trained doctor, knocked on the door. And with her was her Christian husband. And said, I know we haven't seen you, but we're still following the Lord. And next week, we're traveling to Africa to be missionaries in Malawi. That was many years ago. But the storm that it took from one side of the world to the other. And you may be sitting in a storm today, asking yourself, why? As Paul was sitting in chains at the end of this story, singing, I'm in chains. Why? But God has a plan. And he is sovereign. And time is too short to go into too many details this morning. But wherever you find yourself, God is sovereign. He is in control, even though we cannot see it. God's sovereignty may be a word that we don't use very often these days, but it means he's in control. A few years ago now, I was doing a mission in one of the churches in Glasgow, and we had an outreach week, and it was for international students, but anybody who passed the front door, and this guy had come from Easter House. He just got out of prison, and he was homeless. And he was looking really for a cup of tea and a biscuit and a bun or something like that. But he came into the church and we started sharing with him about the Lord Jesus. And I was sharing a little bit about the work in Thailand and telling him how good God was, even in the difficult situations. And he looked at me, possibly not quite fully understanding the situation. And he turned and he said, well, he says, that sounds pure dead brill. I think that's Glaswegian for God is sovereign. Yeah, that was the local vernacular. And so if you're not familiar with the term, God is sovereign in all circumstances, I think if I was in Glasgow, I'd say it's God is pure dead brill, but said with a Scottish accent or Glaswegian accent. When we find ourselves in difficult situations, how do we respond? Some of you remember Malcolm Muggeridge. And I am watching the clock here. Malcolm Muggeridge, of course, he was into everything. He was searching most of his life. He was so interested in communism, so much supported it, he went to Russia and lived there for over 10 years. And after he'd spent his time there, he said, nope, I don't believe in communism. I'm anti-communist. He became a strong anti-communist. He then came back, and during the Second World War, he became a soldier and a spy for the British in Europe and in Paris, in France. And at the end of that time, he said, still was searching. for something to guide him. He went off to India, met Mother Teresa, and he became a journalist. And it was really Malcolm Muggeridge was one of the earliest people that discovered, if you like, or brought Mother Teresa to the wider world so that they recognized what she was doing. He was searching for something. And he was a man who, in his journalist, he wrote prolific articles and became very influential in many circles. And during his days traveling, whether he was in Russia or as a spy, whatever it was, he kept laborious diaries, detailed diaries of his life. And they were printed in the 1980s. And he wrote and he titled this life that he'd had, a colorful life. Yeah, Russia, India, Europe, spy life. And he titled his autobiography, Chronicles of a Wasted Time. You imagine that? He didn't see what he was there for. And in 1990, when he was dying, he wrote these words. Contrary to what might be expected, I look back on experiences that at the time seemed especially desolating and painful, but not in sadness, but in particular satisfaction. You see what he's saying? He's written this his diary, and he said it's a wasted life, a wasted time. But he's now looking back, and he says, those moments that were hardest, the most difficult times, the storms in my life, he says, I can say with complete truthfulness that everything I learned in my 75 years in this world, everything that truly enlightened and trained me has been through affliction and hardship, not happiness. And why did he say that? Because later on he became a Christian. All those experiences brought him to Christ. And when he looked back at the pain and the storms in his life, he could say, it wasn't the good times, it was the bad times that actually enlightened me. I'm going to have to jump a little bit here because time is moving on. Let me just end with this story written by Beth Landers, actually, in one of her books. And the story goes that a man found a cocoon of an emperor moth. Those moths are huge. They can go up to 6, 10 inches, sometimes 12 inches in size. Beautiful big wings. And he found a cocoon, and he took it home with him, waiting for it to appear out of the cocoon. And after a few days, a little crack, a little opening started in the cocoon. And he sat and watched for hours as the moth inside started to climb out. But hours passed, and the moth had barely got any distance whatsoever, struggling to get out through this tiny little hole. And so the gentleman decided, I'll help it out. I'll be kind. He got a pair of scissors and cut the opening at the top of the cocoon to let the moth out. And sure enough, the moth popped out with no difficulty whatsoever. And he saw that this moth had a big body and tiny shriveled wings. And he thought, well, surely, give it a flap or two, give it a few minutes, it'll begin to, the wings will expand and grow. But time passed, and the moth was left to crawl and drag its body and never flew. Well, it turns out that the cocoon and the struggle that the moth requires to get out of the cocoon through that small hole is what pumps the fluid from the body into the wings so that they become their natural beauty and to do their natural activity, which is to fly. And the point that Beth Landers makes in her book is this, that the merciful snip of the scissors was actually a cruel move. And what was thought to be the easiest way actually killed the moth. And she goes on to say that for the moth to become the moth, it was the struggle that was needed. You and I, we don't like to struggle, do we? We don't like the storms. We don't like the difficulties. But it's in those moments that God is building us up. And time is well up. 1 Peter 1:6-7 says to us, "Rejoice greatly when you suffer grief and all kinds of trials, for it proves the genuineness of your faith, greater than the works of gold." It's been brief this morning. I'm afraid I've had to cut a bit out, but I just want to share with you, if any of you are suffering today and struggling, or there's a storm facing you, then we can trust God. No matter what that situation is, we can trust Him. Even if we cannot see what's ahead, we can trust Him.